You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
And welcome to the Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Appreciate all of you for joining us. But powered by TheBuzzCRM.com, stop juggling marketing tools. I've talked about this for so long right now, but it is your all-in-one solution, TheBuzzCRM, with over 500 tools powered by AI to handle email, social media, and even customer inquiries 24/7. Imagine personalized workflows, omni-channel reach, and never miss a lead with our missed call text-back feature. It doesn't matter what kind of business you are. You want to be covered with a single affordable plan you want to see it in action? We're going to be introducing an introductory webinar so you get you under the hood of the BuzzCRM. You can find out how you can streamline your workflows. Honestly, have an AI sales team at your disposal. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today to learn more and stay tuned for webinar details. You'll learn more about that very soon. If you want to get in right now, low barrier to entry, thebuzzcrm.com. Do it. I don't get commission off of this. I just do the ad. I'm telling you because it works, because I use it every day myself. So find out for yourself, thebuzzcrm.com. And today, wonderful guest we have on the program. Been looking forward to this for a while. My next guest is a seasoned cannabis industry executive, currently serving as the executive vice president of edibles.com, a pioneering e-commerce marketplace for curated hemp-derived THC products. Yes, that is the same edibles.com that is part of Edible Brands, the parent company of the iconic Edible Arrangements, where you can find stores all over the country. With a strong background in navigating complex regulatory landscapes and scaling businesses, Wynn Stanley, our guest, previously excelled as the chief marketing officer for Theory Wellness, instrumental in growing the largest independent, vertically integrated cannabis company on the East Coast, also brings significant regulatory expertise and a keen focus on consumer safety to his current role. He's leading the charge to build what some are calling the Amazon of hemp-derived THC. He's a vocal advocate against restrictive legislation of Texas bills, Senate Bill 3. We're going to talk about that and more here with Thomas Winstanley. Thomas, thanks for being on.
Jorge, it's a pleasure. I'm glad we finally get to do this.
Absolutely. So there are a few things to bring up in this. Let me go ahead and take a look with the latest news on this that was brought up. So there is now over 100,000 signatures to stop Senate Bill 3. And it's just to give the background on this, I want to just go back and go to a story that we talked about with Kari Griffin, who's at Clark Hill. We talked to him on a previous episode, talking about the fact that there were inconsistencies in state regulations regarding THC products. One with House Bill 28, which would be allowing THC drinkables in the state of Texas, Senate Bill 3, a complete ban in Texas. And these different viewpoints stem from varying approaches to elite regulation. Some states viewing drinkable THC products as potentially manageable under existing alcohol regulations, while others express stronger concerns regarding public safety and potential harm to youth. So, Thomas, to you, first of all, you bring stark figures on the potential impact of Senate Bill 3. That, first of all, over 6,300 businesses are shuttered, more than 40,000 workers displaced, and approximately $2.1 billion in lost wages, not to mention millions in retail sales and tax revenue. So behind these numbers, can you give me a more vivid picture of what this economic ecosystem collapse would look like on the ground for everyday Texans or the farmers, retail owners, if this Senate bill were to pass?
At the end of the day, this is a rug pull that affects all Texas residents. So regardless of where you are in the supply chain, whether you are a general consumer, a veteran looking for an alternative to opioids from the VFW, you're a small business owner, you're a manufacturer. I mean, this has major implications across all segments of Texas residents. And especially with a category like hemp, which we are seeing is successful. You know, I don't think there is a rapid rise of a CPG portfolio that we have seen like this in not as long as I've really been around. Cannabis maybe is closest, but even still, that was very restricted. And I think ultimately the rise of hemp is a reflection of consumer sentiments, not just in Texas, but on the national landscape. People want safe access to THC products. Hemp is really filling that gap for many consumers. And this is why it's such a large industry. And to see the second largest populous state in the country, the largest for hemp products, put a bill through that looks like this is egregious. It is political theater. I don't think the politicians who are supporting this bill are coming at it from a true health and wellness standpoint, which is what is being, you know, essentially being given as the rationale. And it is incredibly discouraging. And I think some of the remarks made by Governor Patrick were beyond inflammatory, borderline insane, making claims that these products, that people like myself are out here to kill children. If it wasn't coming from a politician, I would say it's satire. And it is, as somebody who has two little kids of my own, who's been in this industry for as long as I have on cannabis and now in hemp, it's scary to know that reefer madness, despite the progress being made, is still here, and especially coming from a lieutenant governor who clearly does not understand this category is alarming. But we're no strangers in this industry to fighting these types of political battles. Our job is to influence outcomes. We cannot control outcomes. And I think that's where I try to keep my lens around this type of moment. And I think this also becomes a bigger moment for education, awareness, and demystifying the things that we've been fighting for to change since prohibition began. So it's a wild time.
But overall, Texas wants to just be the ultimate standoff for any cannabis legalization of anything whatsoever. They've been so limited, or if at all. And to go into the other area of hemp, it's not surprising to go ahead and bring this here. And I'm not sure, remember, and I also know that the population is also quite changing as well. So there's even public, you know, commentary will probably be different now than it was 10 years ago, just from all the changes to be made. So in this here, you also argue that Senate Bill 3, despite its stated aim to enhance consumer safety, would also fuel an unregulated illicit market, undercutting legitimate operators, and also saying that history shows, quote, prohibition doesn't erase demand, it just removes accountability and transparency. And from your experience, can you tell me the specific mechanisms that by which the bill would inadvertently bolster illicit market? And one of the things, I guess, is that this is also just a testament to the fact that the hemp bill, we don't have a hemp bill that's been put in place nationally. The FDA, I don't care which administration it is, never have given any kind of implementation. They have kicked the can down the road. I think that's the other thing, too, is that with the hemp bill being kicked to 2026, want to make it a midterm issue. Okay, but it doesn't change anything for 2019, 2018. When they put it out there, no framework to follow. Mm-hmm. So the from the national standpoint, it's a gray area. No one knows, and there's a lot of issues with illicit market anyway. With, we talk about packaging, especially with edibles, different packaging of different products that look like kids' packaging that can be definitely misconstrued. So in that area, why is it that Texas wants to be so restrictive on this? Meanwhile, the rest of the country doesn't have this kind of distinction at all. There's been not even the federal government has done nothing to go ahead and address it. Why does Texas want to be so much of a killjoy about it?
I mean, you're speaking my language. I think it's funny because my original thesis on this was that this is a cure worse than the disease. And to kind of break it down from how I viewed this and have discussed it with people, I will acknowledge there is a health threat. There is a public health threat, partially because of the way the hemp bill or the farm bill introduced hemp products without a codifying hierarchy of policy that set things like limits on the type of products and packaging guardrails. So what we saw was this proliferation where all of a sudden these products showed up everywhere. And not all products are created equally. So I look at it in a lens of there is a problem to be solved, which is, in my perspective, there should not be products that are being sold that are consumer health threats, which I would classify as very high milligram dosing, 1,000 to 2,000 milligram chews being sold at gas stations without certificates of analysis, with traditional CPG candy brands that are in the shelves of, you know, most gas stations or grocery stores that have a name and likeness to an intoxicating product. Those are all things that I have no patience for. And ultimately, I want to believe that a threat of SB3 came from the optics created by an unregulated market that blossomed as fast as it did, with actors who were not playing by the same rules that were introduced in the policy in the first place. So when I say that policy is required, the policy required is to get rid of those actors who are not going to compliantly operate in these categories, in these spaces. I don't think minors should have access to these products. That's a non sequitur. That's an obvious no. Yeah. However, an outright ban, well, the ban doesn't remove demand. Demand for veterans who are looking for an alternative to opioids that they had found that gives them a better quality of life. It doesn't change the fact that consumers in Texas still want to use THC. And as soon as you say, okay, well, all of these things are going to be taken away from constituents, well, that demand still exists. We have been finding a way to buy THC products since Prohibition began, regardless of rules. And this was an opportunity to create a regulatory framework that could take away the bad actors that were not participating in the way that the laws originally governed. And unfortunately, when you take away the good actors, you are left with the bad actors who don't care what they don't care about policy. They're the ones who are making these products in the first place. Those products are still going to be around. And it is incredibly discouraging that this level of rhetoric is still being debated in a public way, which is, I think, more about special interest of where and why these politicians are advocating for an outright ban. I think there's a misalignment of expectation from the constituents. And I think somebody who loves politics, which is probably a hot button thing to say as somebody who's from the cannabis industry,
right?
I do find it particularly egregious that constituents who are elected by these officials will not listen to the people who put them there in the first place. And that, to me, is an undermining of the democratic values that govern the republic. And I think Texas is a very, very clear, there's a very large and loud vocal minority who unfortunately is in power, who is not listening to, I would also say that the very loud majority of people who are saying, don't do this to us. And I think, you know, the last thing I will add to this is the health threat. If you really were to break this down, you know, this double standard, you know, I think in Texas, you know, recent stats that I saw were, you know, 28,000 adults in Texas die each year from smoking related illness. Mm-hmm. We still let people smoke tobacco, which is fine. It's somebody's choice.
Yep.
Over 26,000 alcohol related car crashes in Texas in 2023. Well, we didn't take away cars from people. Guns kill people. Guns is the number one killer of children in Texas are guns.
Yeah.
But yet we keep them. There has not been one single reported death from hemp. And yet we are saying that this is dangerous. And furthermore, that adults can't choose to enjoy something that ushers a better quality of life. That, to me, is the highest order of flagrant politics that is rabble-rousing a political theater for reasons that I still, to this day, cannot understand. And I think it is a major violation to the residents of Texas, and they are angry, and they have every right to be angry about this.
It feels archaic, almost feeling like, well, oh, it's like cannabis is coming out from the southern border or something like that. It's like, it's like some kind of thought process, like, It's one of those kind of things. I'll just completely crack down and prohibit everything. No. Come on.
Yeah.
Stop and this way.
And Texas always prides itself on being a free market state, and that it's, you know, it wants to allow people to have the choice for these things. And, you know, and I think there's a certain point where, you know, no amount of lobbying or advocacy or education could have changed an outcome that was written before discussions even occurred. And the one thing I will say about SB3, so the Senate introduced SB3 along with HB28.
Well, actually, let's just go to commercial break, and we're going to come back and revisit the context on both and just get your take on things when it comes down to where things are with what the House bill actually is more favorable and why the Senate bill should actually replicate more towards the House bill, because there's at least more concessions that go to that. We're going to go ahead and explain all that and go ahead and just put all in. Tied it all together. I'm here again with the Executive Vice President of Edibles.com, Thomas Winstanley, here on Blunt Business. Back after a short break. Welcome back. I'm here with Thomas Winstanley, Executive Vice President of Edibles.com, here on Blunt Business. So,
hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen. Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts. Like, last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. Sally from Finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You've contrasted sharply, Thomas, with the Texas House bill, which was HB23. By the way, trying to look for information online, I don't know if they just kind of scrubbed it or whatever it is, because if I go look for that, it doesn't matter what AI or whatever search results I'm going to look for, it's almost like it didn't even exist. Because the more focus is right now on Senate Bill 3, but it was calling for a far more reasonable compromise that recognized not all hemp products are created equal. And there were specific elements in there like THC caps, 21 and older access, expanded licensing that were included in that bill that you believe would have most effectively addressed most legitimate consumer safety concerns, but still allowing the legal hemp industry to mature responsibly. But this right now for State Bill 3 is more blunt forced approach. So is there anything that was in the House bill I can't find that you could tell me about that would have been more reasonable, that if the Senate would have just taken up that bill, incorporated it, then would have been a better, you would at least would have a better, you know, compromise?
Yeah. So essentially, there were a couple of bills that were going through. It started with SB3, which was the nuclear option, ban everything. Mm-hmm. There was a House Bill 28 that essentially was going to move all of the beverage category under a tier 3 system that would have effectively outlawed everything other than beverages, which I was not personally a supporter of. But again, we're splitting hairs because you take something rather than nothing. But what was really, I think, startling to me was SB3 originally was passed through the Senate, and then it went to the House. Once the House had their hands on the bill, then they came forward with a much more proactive version of a bill. That bill included things like segmenting inhalables versus ingestibles, codifying ingestibles as low-dose products without actually having any of the vaporizers, flour, so on and so forth. It also included new regulatory statutes around the types of licenses that were required, milligram caps and dosing, and basically trying to create a framework in which there was an opportunity for regulators to then go enforce policy. So if you didn't have these licenses, you could not operate and you'd be found in violation. And that version of the bill of HB 3 was brought back to the floor at the end of the legislative cycle a few weeks ago. And that's when we saw the real political theater at its highest level, when Tom Oliverson, the state rep who is from, I believe, Lubbock, called a floor amendment and reintroduced the original version of SB 3, the ultimate ban, back to the floor. And I think this type of legislative session where there are meaningful attempts to create and preserve this type of industry went on absolutely deaf ears. And did I agree with everything in the version of the House Bill 3? Not everything, but I think it was a lot better than what we'd seen from an outright ban. And the discussions that ensued were, you know, frankly, as somebody who's invested a lot of time and energy in my life into, to be reduced down to the view that these are dangerous and, you know, have a social threat to them is incontrovertibly wrong in many, many layers. And I think when I look at the veteran, the VFW, which is 1.5 million members of our forces who have fought for our country, to tell them no, I think is not being able to read the room very well. And even as recent as yesterday, there was a media event when Dave Walden, who is a member of the VFW, in very blunt terms said, "You are reducing us to going into opioids and opioid addiction all over again. On behalf of our veterans, do not do this." And it is very hard to put into words how the level of misalignment, and especially when the policymakers of Texas were actually trying in earnest to put forth a bill that addressed, again, the symptoms of a problem within this category that with very minor introductions of policy could solve and codify and maintain this massive marketplace and this consumer access point. And it is beyond me to understand why, aside from outside political interest. And when you start to go down that rabbit hole of where does Tom Oliverson, you know, get his funding from? Where does Lieutenant Governor Patrick get his funding from? It's very clear that both healthcare and pharmaceuticals and big alcohol are all tethered in because of, you know, and they are paying for this type of positioning in a category. And it's not over yet. And I don't want to be all doom and gloom either, Jorge. I mean, there is still a very large grassroots opposition campaign that is running. And it is across many different sites, signing letters, emailing Governor Abbott, you know, sending in postcards and letters to, you know, the governor. But again, I think this becomes an interesting point to watch is now this is in Abbott's hands. What does Abbott do? Because Abbott is, I think, in some ways is caught between a rock and a hard place, where he's got, on one hand, he's got, you know, a bill that his lieutenant governor is forcing upon him. At the same time, too, he also knows he's not known for vetoing these bills. And especially with, you know, Texas has got an interesting legislative cycle. It's a 2-year cycle. You know, he can either veto the bill and it goes away, or they, you know, he signs it or he doesn't sign it and it goes into law. And we'll know by June 22nd where he lands. And I think until that day, the fight will continue, and the fight's going to continue afterwards. And I think when we start to see the rise of real issues within this state, people driving to New Mexico, people driving, you know, going to the black market and getting products the same way. And I think, like, underscoring and maybe the worst, Jorge, like the worst insult to injury around this is that anybody found with a hemp derived product containing any level of THC, it's punishable by a year in jail.
Wow.
The cannabis policy
is less restrictive than that in the state. And that to me is unethical.
Egregious. Yeah.
Yeah, it's unethical. There's no reason, unless you're trying to fill prison cells in the privatized prison system of Texas, that you're going to look for every opportunity to continue to go after minority groups who are, you know, already fruit for police action. And when you look at the stats about, you know, the comparison between social groups who, from the ACLU, of who gets the worst penalties around cannabis and THC products, we are just prolonging this horrible cycle about a goddamn plant, and it makes no sense to me.
All right, too. Let's come back after a short break while I go and clear my throat. Tom and Prince Stanley, EVP of Edibles.com, is with me here on Blunt Business. Back after a short break. I'm back with final questions. We're with Thomas Will Stanley, EVP of Edibles.com. And why, some of my listeners might ask, if you don't already know yet, why is it that Thomas and the folks at Edibles.com, why is this such an important issue about Texas Senate Bill 3? Well, because Edible Brands, known for edible arrangements, they launched Edibles.com back in March as an e-commerce marketplace for THC-infused hemp products. And the platform was here to address the challenges in the hemp industry, such as inconsistent quality and testing standards, offering a curated selection by trusted brands like CAM, WANA, 1906, great brands. We've all featured them here on the program. And the service initially launched in Texas in March of 2025, with plans to expand to Florida, Georgia, and eventually offer nationwide shipping where legally permitted. So I want to ask real quickly where you are in the process right now in terms of expansion. And also, you're looking to go and open up a flagship retail store in Atlanta, explore a limited franchising program to expand across access to the THC industry. So obviously, there's a personal onus as to why you and your team are so embedded into this story right here. But tell me what it is about what you have done so far with Edibles.com and what a bill like this in Texas will do that will hamper some of the efforts you've already made since March.
Yeah, well, at the end of the day, you know, one of the reasons why I came on board here was, you know, from day one, I've always been somebody who loves THC products, always been somebody who believes that safe access is important and taking it into a regulated market is important. That's a pretty loaded, wide-reaching response. But, you know, ultimately for me, I think these products have so many meaningful benefits. And so when we started to build this and, you know, when I got to come on board and start to really develop this, we wanted to help become an accelerator in this category. The way that hemp became what it was this really interesting reverse engineering of a sales funnel where the points of distribution were essentially just DTC for the most part. And so where we were able, what I found really interesting about our ability to influence the white space in the category is by taking all of these incredible brands that you mentioned and putting them into one place for consumers to engage with them and try them, purchase them without having the baggage of going to a gas station and saying, where do I start? Like, what is this? Like, I've heard about this. We wanted to help give permission to these consumers to try these products, to start to build a relationship. And the trust and responsibility that comes with Edible Brands and the, you know, the parent company Edible Brands and our relationship to Edible Arrangements helps give that permission in a substantive way. And that to my knowledge, we are still one of the first to launch a portfolio of the size and scale with multiple points of access across the category. So the reason why we started this in Texas was, one, we did not want to launch across multiple markets all at once until we had a trusted proof of concept on how this operationally works. And Texas for us was, we had a lot of good penetration with our independent operators who do the fulfillment. We knew that this was a market that was the leading market in the country around these products, that there was a willingness for it. And ultimately, we're a reflection of these incredible brands that we have who said yes. And I've known these brands for years from the cannabis industry, and I can evaluate based on my compliance background as a CMO who is really taking this seriously and who's looking for a quick buck? And none of these brands, I would say, are doing that. And, you know, for us, Texas is, you know, it's a special spot for me because, you know, I got to drive around the state for the week before our launch and I got to talk to people in the stores and I got to talk to, you know, spend a bunch of time in the Texas market, meet with the press and do all the great things. And it was a very clear moment to me where it's like, hey, this is amazing that we get to do this. This is a privilege for us to operate in this category with these partners. And so to see this taken away, you know, we have skin in the game here. It does hurt. You know, this is painful. But I think also it comes with the territory that I'm no stranger to, where as much as we think that we're on solid ground anywhere, whether cannabis or hemp or just THC in general, there are a lot of unknowns. And what we are really trying to do is build an affinity circle of like-minded operators who have the same lens on the future of this category, which is very simple. Get people access to THC products, give them a reason to enjoy them, help them understand the impact it can have on their lives, and create a way that will to facilitate this type of commerce that creates jobs, that fills a supply chain, that reaches consumers. And so to see this with Texas is, I'm digging in pretty hard on this, as you can probably hear.
Absolutely. I think you're well-rounded about it. And the most important thing I wanted to get as a takeaway from this was because by getting the chance to go talk to you, team, and really the fact that, okay, what is this behind edible arrangements? What is it with edibles.com be brought into place? You're with the right partners.
Yeah.
And I think you've proven to me, you know, just as a litmus test, that this is not just some other corporations coming into the cannabis space just to go ahead and, you know, bottom line this. I don't see it at all. I know it's not that at all. And again, the advocacy of what you've been able to say and what you publicly have stated about this issue right here is showing, you know, the wonderful amount of advocacy, because you have a platform, you have a megaphone, you have a soapbox where you can actually be heard. So if people want to hear from you in the Texas Senate, they can actually, we'll pay attention and hear what you're saying. Now, one of the things you also make mention of is that, and we're going to wrap things up with this, is that this fight's not about hemp, quote. It's about responsible governance, economic freedom, and protecting the rights of constituents. So if this is if SB3 is not the plan for it, what would be effective responsible governance for the hemp-derived CBD industry look like in practice that edibles.com would be able to go and work very efficiently in?
Look, I think thoughtful policy is one of the most important things. It's ironic going from cannabis into hemp, where cannabis is overregulated, hemp is underregulated. We need to create some forms of frameworks that I think will fall on states to then determine. I don't think right now there's a one-size-fits-all model for this. What I would love to see is thoughtful policy, and that thoughtful policy is ensuring that all operators, whether it's a retail store, on-premise, delivery, are licensed up. Create a track record of all those operators. Throw on an excise tax on those purchases of these regulated goods. Ensure those excise funds are going into enforcement and compliance to follow through on policy. And then I think maybe, you know, creating a framework of what is constituting these products to be sold. Is it the separation between inhalables and ingestibles? Is it milligram caps and serving sizes? This is responsible governance. I don't think it is necessarily all tier three, because I don't know that putting all the economics into the alcohol world is necessarily the best thing for a lot of the entrepreneurs who are passionate about this space. I think trying to preserve some level of a free market that creates some tax revenue, that codifies an industry with safe access, that's the most important. But you can't have policy without enforcement. You need to make money on these products being sold and use those funds to go enforce, because that's what's going to get rid of the things that's going to get rid of the disease of the black market and illicit products. And that needs to be the focal point. And it's not people like us who are killing kids, or nobody's killing kids, period. But I think there is a thoughtful and pragmatic legal framework that can be introduced. And I'll say, after moving from Massachusetts down to Georgia, when I first stepped into a gas station, I could not believe the amount of THC products being sold unregulated.
Yeah.
But Georgia did introduce laws in October of 2024, and they're doing a great job with enforcement. and they're doing a great job with compliance, and they are going into hundreds of stores and removing the things that should not be there. And so I defy anybody who says Texas got too big to be able to walk it back, because I'm living in a state where that occurred. There is a way. It's really going to take people coming together and speaking truth to power around this category.
Yeah. You know, and I feel bad. We haven't had a lot of time to go and talk about the website itself, and the online-driven, wellness-driven online marketplace is edibles.com. And I mentioned a couple of the brands that are featured there on the website, but also didn't make mention of for Happy and for Heirloom that are also part of this. And, you know, there's a lot there. And I think it's really a great barrier to entry. I mean, it's like a badge of, you know, of legitimacy, because of the fact that if anybody makes it to that website, that means the process you've gone through to say that, okay, these are people that we want to stand behind. We're going to put their product out up first and forward and make it accessible to everybody as they can. So again, you already have it in several states so far, working on Texas. Hopefully everything stays in place. We'll see what happens with the Senate bill and see where it goes. We'll obviously do an update here on the program. We'll obviously get word about it. And then one thing I want to do is I also want to bring you back so we can talk more about the marketplace itself. We got to, you know, we'll table that again. We're going to do that in March, but I know that, you know, things just got a little bit busy, so it's okay. But at this point, yeah.
I will tell you, Jorge, we will have a lot of exciting news, some new brands, some new markets, and some updates on the shipping side in the very near future. So I will make sure that you get the inside track on when some of those wheels start to really, really turn. But it's exciting nonetheless, and Texas isn't going to stop us. If anything, it's motivating us, because
right.
We need to do our part here, and then now is the time.
I want to ask one more thing, is that also for those other brands out there, they're saying to themselves, we want to get on here ourselves. What is the recruitment process that they could possibly do for them to be considered to go onto the website? What can you tell them about that?
Yeah, so that's actually something that I've spent a lot of time post-launch on sifting through. So there are so many incredible brands in this category and in this space, and it's so hard to pick which ones we think are the right fit. Rule one for me is curation. I think curated products are important because I want to make sure that they have a certain level of ability to meet compliance standards, that they have a really true meaning to their outcomes for the folks who enjoy them. But again, what I do is we get a lot of folks who reach out. We ask them for samples. We ask them for some background. We do kind of a screening conversation. We go through a really heavy contracting process. But really what I'm looking for is I'll be honest, I used to use these products all the time. I'm a weekend, you know, non-school night user as a dad of young kids. So, but in that time, I love to sample, try and make sure if it's a sleep judo, do I fall asleep well? I've spent enough time in the industry and used so many products that I can quickly tell who's making quality products, who's avoiding synthetics, you know, who's really trying to build this for the long run versus short-term cash grab. You know, and I think that's a reflection of the folks we have today. I think it's a reflection of the folks that are coming on. But I also will, you know, I have turned away products because they have graphic illustrations that my kid who's almost four says, why is there a berry sleeping on a couch of this? And I'm like, yeah, it's not going to fly on my end. So, you know, look, we're building this for the future of the industry, not necessarily where it's at today. And that's where we want to find partners who are going to come with us in the long run as we continue to expand and grow. And, you know, we are very shrewd about who those are. But I think over time, our hope is that we want to introduce more and more. But if people are interested, people can shoot email to wholesale@edibles.com. I'm usually the person who gets back to them. And we take the conversation to the next step. And usually we try to be fair to everybody, get everybody an equal look. But really, We're building this we want to be a leader in this category. And having come from vertical integration in the cannabis industry, it's a very different landscape for me. Instead of making my own products, I get to kind of review and audit other people's products as it aligns with the long-term business strategy. And so these are all things that we look at. I mean, everything down to the ratio of the cost per milligram per serving size, all the way through to how long have you been in the space? What is your track record? How large is your reach? How large is your distribution? What is your long-term strategy? And, you know, frankly, there are people who love to have that conversation. People are like, well, just take my product.
First point you got to do is you got to go ahead and email again, wholesale@edibles.com. Just talk to Thomas, make your case. But I'll tell you, who you already have up on the website right now, very credible. And like I said, we've had a lot of those folks here on Cannabis Radio we featured on the program. Definitely, we like the folks at Canon Wanna and all the work they do. So we'll keep it going from there. Thomas, we're going to come back into this again. Thank you for being on Blunt Business as always. Really appreciate you taking time out.
Jorge, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
And let's hope the folks in the Texas Senate are listening to this program and realize, you know, let's get something to the governor's desk and say, you know what? No on Senate Bill 3. Let's get something else better on the books. Come back for another Blunt Business. We'll talk to you next time.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Maytag laundry appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your home's unique needs and style. Shop Maytag 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.